Well, when I thought about the invitation to speak to you today, it came to my mind that a certain doctrine of the moon that was of central importance in Hellenistic astrology might be a suitable topic for my guest lecture. One problem with which ancient astrologers were faced was to explain the partly dramatic changes from prosperity to misery and vice versa in the biographies of certain individuals. How could events of different or even opposite qualities be explained from one natal alignment of the stars? There was a need for a doctrine that allowed the astrologer to differentiate the fate of a client, especially in retrospect, when a known biography called for explanation of incontrovertible facts. And in order to make such a doctrine seem natural and convincing, it would be good to devise it in keeping with traditional concepts of ancient culture, be they medical or philosophical or of other kind. Let us then investigate one strategy that was devised by Hellenistic astrologers. And I'd like to say, incidentally, I was not exactly sure how technical or philosophical or what the accent of these guest lectures normally is. Probably there is variety in your guest lectures. There is a bit of technicalities in my guest lecture. It's a bit technical, but I promise simple technical details, so do not despair. Well, you may have wondered when you first read the title of my paper whether it contains a mistake, because who ever heard of a 40th day of the moon? This figure seems to be nonsensical in view of the much shorter synodic and sidereal periods of the moon, which both take less than 30 days. If you did wonder about this detail, you are in very good company, because no less an expert on ancient astronomy than Otto Neugebauer suspected an error of transmission when he came across this figure in the astrological work of Vettius Valens, an important Greek astrologer of the 2nd century CE. Neugebauer judged the numeral 40 to be, quote, meaningless, and he amended to 14. We shall, however, see that Neugebauer was wrong about this detail. I shall first translate and analyze the only systematic theoretical account of our doctrine. Second, review all relevant passages of Greco-Roman literature, which has not been done before. Third, argue that the doctrine in question can be understood only if one combines astronomy with ancient number symbolism and with the astrological doctrine of the aspects. And fourth, I'll try to give an analysis of one ancient application that is suitable to illustrate our doctrine, preserved in the horoscope of Emperor Hadrian, written by Antigonus of Nicaea in the 2nd century CE. Our starting point will be chapter 14 of the first book of Vettius Valens, which is text 1 on your handout. This chapter is the only extant systematic explanation of the doctrine of the 3rd, 7th, and 40th day. Besides, the text of Valens is the only ancient reference to our doctrine that was known to Otto Neugebauer. Valens must have considered this doctrine to be of fundamental importance because the first book of his anthologies is devoted to basic tenets of astrology. The fact that Valens refers to different methods of computation. By the way, please do not read the text of my translation at this point. I'll go into that in a moment. I'll try to give you some introductory remarks before we look into the text itself. So the fact that valence refers to different methods of computation used by different astrologers shows that the doctrine in question is not his own invention. It must be comparatively old, because the development of competing variants of the original doctrine, which is typical of ancient astrology, such ramifications of variants, this process has already taken place. However, the example in question, 7 degree Scorpio, as we shall see, was chosen by Valens himself, not by earlier astrologers, because it refers to the horoscope of Valens himself, which we know from other passages of his work, because in his birth chart, the moon occupied the 7th degree of Scorpio. So I shall now translate the text and illustrate it with some slides. Valens says, on the 3rd, 7th, and 40th days of the moon. Regarding the 3rd, 7th, and 40th days, it works thus. Let the moon be in the 7th degree of Scorpio. Then the 3rd day will be in the 7th degree of Sagittarius. For thus one must search the days. Above all, the 7th degree of Sagittarius is, in the present example, established as the 3rd day. And the 7th day will be found with regard to charting the outcomes on the square side around 7 degrees of Aquarius. And the 40th day around 7 degrees of Taurus. As we shall see, there is a problem regarding the reliability of this value. We will have to correct the text later regarding this position here. Continues Valens, saying, some, however, add 160 degrees to the longitude of the moon at the time of birth and count off this amount from the zodiacal sign in which the moon was at birth. Again, others add the natal degree of the moon to 3, 7, and 40 degrees, and by way of counting, calculate the moon there, where the count leaves off. This last mentioned alternative method is not quite clear. We shall concentrate on the first and on the second. In general, then, Valens says, they interpret the fortunate, unfortunate, and middle nativities based on the 3rd, 7th, and 40th days of the moon. For if these places are beheld by benefic planets situated in effective places and not by malefic planets, then declare the nativities to be exceedingly lucky and great. If, however, two places are regarded by benefics, but the other by malefics, call them average. And if all three are beheld only by malefics, while the benefics are not making an aspect, call them unfortunate. And if they, the benefics and malefics, are mixed, call the nativities average. End of quote. So let us examine Valens's reasoning based on a linear diagram, which is easier to design, as I must admit. And we shall also base this examination on the standard figure of daily lunar motion that was used by ancient astrologers, namely 13 degrees per day. To give you a brief explanation of this diagram, on the upper row here you see the day count of the moon's progress through the zodiacal signs. Beneath the central graph you see the degrees of lunar motion since birth. So the lunar motion begins with zero at the time of birth, when the moon is at 7 degrees Scorpio, The moon will, on the third day, travel along the zodiacal arc of 3 to 16 degrees Sagittarius. Within this arc, only the seventh degree counts astrologically, apparently because it is exactly one zodiacal sign removed from the starting position at 7 degree Scorpio. On the seventh day, the moon travels from 25 Capricorn to 8 degree Aquarius, but again, it is just one degree that counts according to Valens, namely 7 degree Aquarius, which forms a square aspect with the starting position in Scorpio. When we come to the 40th day, problems arise. Since a full lunar cycle takes circa 30 days, Neugebauer amended the numeral 40 to 14, 1-4. At first sight, this seems attractive because on the 14th day, the moon travels from 26 degree Aries to 9 degree Taurus. And this arc includes 7 degree Taurus, the longitude that Valens mentions in his text as the corresponding position of the moon on the last day. This is the exact opposition of the starting position at 7 degree Scorpio, and opposition is one of the most important astrological aspects. I try to visualize the same thing again with a circular diagram. So the positions mentioned by Valens are these three, and Neugebauer thought 7 degree Taurus must be the correct final position because it is nicely opposite the starting position.
So it's on the 14th.
It would be the 14th day. So the moon would be in this position, but not on the 40th day, on the 14th. Yes, right. Well, this is what the text says, but according to Neugebauer, this would have to be changed. Yes, you're right. What Neugebauer did not know, however, is that there is not a single parallel in ancient literature to support his emendation, while there are several other ancient texts that refer to our doctrine and confirm the correctness of the numeral 40. Here you see a list of, it's quite a number of texts, and they all confirm that the doctrine is about 40 days of the moon, not 14. We cannot review all these texts in detail. Suffice it to provide this survey that you see here in tabular form and in chronological order. As you see, there are more than 20 passages in Greco-Roman astrological texts that refer to our doctrine. All those authors who explicitly mention the ordinal number of the last day of the series agree that it is the 40th. And those who apply the doctrine to horoscopes give lunar longitudes that match the lunar positions on the 40th day of each horoscope. Hence, there is no room left for Neugebauer's astronomically motivated emendation of the figure 40 to 14. I'm trying to distinguish, it's not so easy in English, but you see my point. 40 must be wrong, it must be 14. Returning to the text of Valens, we notice an interesting detail. Valens says that some astrologers determine the final position of the moon by simply adding 160 degrees to the lunar position at birth. This figure is incompatible with opposition on the 14th day, which ought to be 180 degrees. However, If we multiply the standard figure of daily lunar motion, 13 degrees, by 40, we obtain 520 degrees, which equals one full circle of 360 degrees plus a remainder of 160. This is an important argument in favor of the 40th day. Combined with the fact that Valens mentions the 40th day no less than five times in chapter 1:14, it proves that it is not the figure 40 that calls for emendation, but the longitude 7° Taurus, which the text of Valens transmits, but which must be a mistake for 7° Aries. This diagram here illustrates the situation, and you will see in a moment why this purely mathematical, I'm not presenting these things to you to make elementary mathematics on a nice evening in Erlangen with you, but rather to understand this main example, this main explanation before we see the cultural background and the deeper meaning of this astrological doctrine. So on this diagram here, you see illustrated the situation when the moon has already completed one cycle and is making its second round. So we start on the 28th day when one full cycle has been completed and the moon starts a second cycle. The correct lunar longitude on the 40th day, 7° Aries, is 150 degrees distant from the natal moon, from the moon at the moment of birth. The reason why Valens mentions certain astrologers who added 160 degrees to the lunar position at birth must be the following. The standard version of the doctrine of the 3rd, 7th, and 40th days leads to zodiacal longitudes whose distance from the natal moon is always a multiple of 30 degrees. In other words, these positions are exactly 1, 3, and 5 full signs away from the natal moon. The alternative version makes a difference in the case of the 40th day because it leads to a position that is not 150, but 160 degrees distant from the natal moon. In other words, this alternative version leads to the very last degree of the very last day to be examined, the 40th day. So this means that our circular diagram, which you saw earlier, that we must correct the 40th day from Taurus to Aries, to 7° Aries. This is what Valens must have meant. I assume that the mistake Taurus instead of Aries was caused, as it happened many times in ancient Greek texts, by confusing symbols. So the names of the zodiacal signs were not written out in letters, but there were symbols used, and the symbols of Aries and Taurus are easy to confuse because both have upright lines in these symbols. Our survey of Greek and Roman sources and our analysis of the text of Vettius Valens allows for several conclusions at this interim conclusions. First, our doctrine is attested from the first century CE, namely Dorotheus. This is our earliest source, Dorotheus of Sidon. From this first century of the Christian era through late antiquity into the Middle Ages. The last source text is from the 12th century Hugo of Santalla. The doctrine is likely to have originated before the beginning of the Christian era because it is used by Antigonus of Nicaea, this author here, in the second century, who explicitly followed the teaching of Necepsos and Petosiris, whose lost manual of astrology can be dated to the second century before the Christian era. Geographically speaking, our doctrine is attested in far distant areas, Alexandria, Rome, Byzantium, and even Baghdad. This author here, Theophilus of Edessa, wrote at the Abbasid court in Baghdad. And our doctrine allows for different methods of interpretation. While that of Valens aims at a general assessment of the quality of a native's life, other authors chronologically associate specific days of the moon with specific periods of life. That means the third day is associated with childhood, the seventh day is associated with reaching the peak of one's life and public career, in a text by Antigonus of Nicaea, and the 40th day is associated with death by three authors, Valens, Antigonus, and Rhetorius. So Valens, Antigonus, and Rhetorius, they all associate the last day, the 40th day, with death. Two last conclusions for the time being. In nine cases, our doctrine is applied to real horoscope. You see that here in the last columns of this table, there are nine cases where the doctrine is really used in discussions of horoscopes. And in a very few cases, the rationale is extended from the moon alone to the planets as additional factors, but the central position of the moon is never questioned. Now, none of these authors reveals the reason that lies behind the choice of just 3 days of the moon to be examined, and why these 3 days are the third, the seventh, and the 40th. In order to find the answer, especially regarding the 40th day, we must broaden our perspective to include not only astronomy, but also number symbolism and elements of broader ancient culture. An impressive mass of relevant material was collected and analyzed a century ago by the renowned classicist Wilhelm Roscher, who published several books pertaining to this field. Besides the Greco-Roman sources, Roscher included much valuable ethnographic material on other cultures from all over the world. I am particularly indebted to Roscher's book on the number 40 among Semitic peoples and among the Greeks and other peoples, both published in 1909 and, despite the long distance in time, unsurpassed ever since. In view of the limited time that is available today, I shall drastically condense Roscher's information that is relevant to our purpose and try to visualize it with diagrams 1 and 2 on the back of your handout. Roscher shows that the number 40 had religious importance from earliest times among an astonishing variety of cultures, not only in the Mediterranean area, but also among peoples as far distant as Siberia and pre-Columbian America. We are dealing with an almost universal cultural phenomenon whose origins seem to lie in human biology, more precisely in the duration of female lochia, the liquid discharge from the uterus after childbirth. This explains the 40-day period of impurity of women after childbirth in many cultures of the world. Closely Related to this is the widespread concept of a mean pregnancy of 280 days, composed of 7 times 40 days, or in the oldest part of the Hippocratic corpus, of 40 times 7 days. So either 40 times 7 or 7 times 40. Particularly important is the first 40-day period. The ancient Pythagorean philosophers thought that a human embryo first assumes recognizable human shape 40 days after conception. This idea is attested in numerous non-Pythagorean texts too. The Hippocratic medical writings further emphasize that the human embryo is endangered up to the 7th day of pregnancy by effluxes and up to the 40th day by miscarriages. So let us take a look at just one example from Greek culture in which 40-day periods regarding conception and birth are combined. Censorinus, who was following the classical scholar Varro, says in the context of the Pythagorean doctrine mentioned before, quote, "That is why in Greece they consider 40th days special. For example, a pregnant woman cannot appear in a sacred area before the 40th day, and for 40 days after birth, the majority of mothers are sick and lose blood occasionally, while the children are weak for about the same number of days, sickly, without smiles, and not without danger. For that reason, when this day is passed, they celebrate a holiday which is called 40th day, Tesarakosteion in Greek. So there was apparently a widespread view, which could be substantiated with many more examples, there must have been a widespread view that childbirth, broadly speaking, took not just one day or one moment, but 40 days to be completed in all religious and medical respects, both for the mother and the child. And we shall see that this unusual idea seems to have an important bearing on this astrological thinking of the time. Besides conception and birth, there is a third starting point of important 40-day periods in human life, namely the end of life, death, to which a 40-day period of impurity and mourning is attached in many ancient cultures. Closely related are 40-day periods of fasting, penitence, and punishment in many ancient cultures. The number 40 is further relevant to the time between birth and death because various cultures, including the Greek, thought that the longest biologically possible human lifespan to be 3 generations of 40 years each, which makes 120 years. Yeah? So the maximum time span for the human life was considered to be 3 times 40 years. As far as 7-day periods are concerned, we find these in the contexts of pregnancy and newborn children too. According to Pythagorean doctrine, the seed turns into blood 7 days after human conception. And it was customary in many parts of the Greco-Roman world to give a name to the newborn child no earlier than the 7th day of life, or immediately after that day, because the survival of the newborn was considered uncertain until that day had passed. All this, I think, gives us the first idea of the symbolic significance of the number 40 and of its relationships with the numbers 3 and 7, within the biological development of a human organism. While the ideas that have been reviewed so far all pertain to the regular, healthy development of a human organism, another important field of day periods was established in Greek theories of pathogenesis, the development of diseases. The numbers 7 and 40 play prominent roles in the various doctrines of critical days in a patient's medical history. Most important of all is the seventh day, which is mentioned more than 250 times in the Hippocratic corpus, followed by the 40th day, which is mentioned more than 70 times. This number, 40, was originally confined to embryology and gynecology, but was later in the Hippocratic tradition applied to all kinds of illnesses, including those of men. The primary importance of the number 7 in Greek medicine has a double reason. On the one hand, the moon was considered to have, among the celestial bodies, the most important influence on biological growth, health, and illness. On the other hand, every 7 days, a new phase of the moon occurs 90 degrees apart from the previous lunar phase. This is made explicit in various texts. One example is the pseudo-Galenic treatise Prognostica de Decubitu, an iatro-mathematical text, so dealing with astrological medicine, that makes predictions on the development of a disease based on the day when the patient fell ill. So this falling ill and going to bed is called decubitus in Latin, literally lying down on the bed because one is ill. A typical sentence in this text runs, as you see on the slide, quote, "Until the seventh day of the moon, he," that is the patient, "will die in the first square," end of quote. The relationship between chronology and geometrical quadrants of the lunar cycle is obvious here and can be visualized thus. The choice of the zodiacal starting position of the moon is completely arbitrary here. I simply took the same diagram of Valens that I used before and modified it. But the important point is that 90 degrees apart, so in a square angle, is the seventh day when this medical text predicts the death of the patient. Another example is the following one. An anonymous Pythagorean treatise on the importance of the number 7 says, quote, "The diseases undergo changes every 7 days, and in matters belonging to birthdays, the lunar position both 7 days before birth, that is in the right square, and again that after 7 days, which is in the left square, foretells marvelous things, thereby teaching us thoroughly." That can be visualized thus. Basically, it's the same diagram as before, but including the previous 7 days before the starting monthly time. So in both texts, 7 day periods are considered to be of decisive medical importance and are explained in geometrical terms within the lunar cycle. While this text may be late, we do not know the exact date, the concept of the medical relevance of the seventh day of the moon, which we know for certain to be very old, must have influenced Pythagorean philosophy at an early date. When Pythagoras and his followers set out to associate numbers with deities, They called the number seven hygieia, that is health in Greek. They also called the number seven kairos, meaning critical moment, and krisis, turning point. So they gave various divine names to the number seven because of its enormous importance, as they believed, in medical processes. One Greek text reports that the Pythagoreans considered the number seven as the underlying cause of the lunar cycle, and that they called it most relevant to the order of nature and marvelous. However, the Pythagoreans, for whom all is number, this is a quotation from ancient doxographical texts, for the Pythagoreans, they also tried an alternative subdivision of the lunar cycle, not 4 times 7 days, but 3 times 9 days. Not surprisingly, in view of the exact length of the sidereal lunar period, which is a bit more than 27, but a bit less than 28 days long. Says Gellius, in the second century of the Christian era, Pythagoras declared that the cube of the number three controls the course of the moon, since the moon passes through its orbit in 27 days, and the ternio, or triad, which the Greeks call trias, when cubed, makes 27. As this text shows, the Pythagoreans were particularly thrilled by the fact that 27 was the cube number of three. As to the number three itself, it is the oldest and most important holy number of Indo-European origin, whose immense importance in many fields of ancient culture, including Pythagoreanism and magic, is well known. As to Pythagoreanism and astrology, it will suffice to refer to the paramount importance of triangles for the doctrine of the aspects, in which triangles on the left of this slide, with their uneven number of sides, are considered harmonious and benefic, while quadrangles on the right side, with their even number of sides, are considered malefic. However, there is not much material regarding the specific relevance of the number three to embryology, pathogenesis, or other fields of medicine, even if the second book of the Hippocratic Epidemics says that this, the third day, is most powerful in the development of a disease. The presence of the third day of the moon in our astrological doctrine is probably motivated by the astronomical fact that the third day is the one on which the moon will necessarily have left its natal zodiacal sign. I shall return to this in a moment. So I hope that it has become clear in this admittedly very brief overview that in ancient Greek thought, periods of 40 and 7 days, and to a lesser extent periods of 3 days, are significant in the context of conception, birth, and death. And there seems to be a Pythagorean influence on our astrological doctrine. But you may ask, and rightly ask, are there also parallels for this very peculiar triadic combination of such periods? Strictly speaking, the answer is no regarding the material that has come down to us from antiquity. There is, however, an interesting doxographical report on an anonymous natural philosopher which deserves attention. John the Lydian reports that this anonymous natural philosopher attached special significance to the third, ninth, and 40th days after the conception, birth, and death of a human being. This authority taught that on the third day after conception, the sperm turns into blood. On the ninth day, the blood turns into flesh, and on the 40th day, the embryo first assumes recognizable human shape. After birth, the child is first taken off the swaddling clothes, the Windeln, on the third day. On the ninth, it gets stronger and endures being touched. And on the 40th, it recognizes the mother and begins to smile. Well, I have no children. I'm not exactly sure if these assertions are all true, but that is what the natural philosopher says. And regarding the last day, by the last moment in a human life, namely when after death, by the third day after death, putrefaction begins to render the corpse unrecognizable, according to this philosopher. By the ninth, decomposition is in full course, with only the heart still intact. And by the 40th day, the process of decay is complete. John the Lydian quotes this doctrine as a physiological explanation of the ancient Roman custom of memorial ceremonies for the dead. We know that there were such pagan ceremonies on the 3rd, 7th or 9th, and 30th or 40th days, which were adapted by early Christians into the custom of commemorating their dead on the 3rd, 9th, and 40th days. Interestingly, there is a conspicuous amount of ethnographical material of more recent date regarding memorial feasts and meals for the dead on the 3rd, 7th, and 40th days among the Osmanic Turks and more northern peoples, customs that may or may not have their origins in the ancient pagan rituals. Both in these memorial customs and in many other fields, we find a competition between the holy numbers 7 and 9. Before writing his two monographs on the number 40, Rocha devoted 4 monographs to the numbers 7 and 9. Collecting and analyzing the vast material offered by Greco-Roman culture and myth. I mean, nowadays, probably such books would not be written by anyone, but they are extremely useful after someone went to that enormous amount of work a century ago. Among his central insights in these books that are listed on the slide, is that the competition between the two numbers, 7 and 9, has its origin in two competing ways of subdividing the lunar cycle, namely 3 times 9 days or 4 times 7 days. Altogether, the hebdomadic periods, those based on the number 7, are older and more deeply rooted in ancient Greek culture. And in medical context, the number 7 is always more important than 9. One last consideration before I come to the practical example of Antigonus of Nicaea. The numbers 3, 7, and 40 all symbolize completion and perfection of a period. Already in Babylonian cuneiform texts, the numbers 7 and 40 are rated kishatum, a word which conveys the notion of completion and perfection, comparable to the Greek concept of a perfect number, arithmos teleios, a perfect number. And 3 is the perfect number par excellence. Therefore, it is not surprising that our astrological doctrine operates with a set of 3 days, no less, and no more. Now, based on these insights, we shall now take a look at a suitable example, namely the horoscope of Emperor Hadrian. It was cast soon after the death of Hadrian by Antigonus of Nicaea, a physician and astrologer of the second century of the Christian era. This horoscope is the most elaborate of all Greco-Roman horoscopes. We have some 350 Greek horoscopes, but most of them are extremely short texts. This one is by far the most elaborate. And Antigonus inserted this horoscope in his manual of astrology with the intention of illustrating the doctrines that he taught. The manual itself is lost, but Hephaestio of Thebes, around 400 AD, made extensive excerpts of it, including three horoscopes discussed by Antigonus. So we have almost 8 or 9 pages en bloc as a quotation from the original manual. The astronomical data given by Antigonus in the opening of his discussion can be visualized thus. On the following pages, Antigonus provides a brief biography of the emperor, followed by astrological explanation of each biographical detail. Towards the end, he wishes to explain the fact that Hadrian died a miserable death caused by dropsy, Wassersucht, certainly not a precise modern term, but a usual medical term in antiquity and still in the early modern period. So he wishes to explain why Hadrian died miserably because of dropsy. Antigonus writes, text 2 on your handout, the last item on your handout, quote, "And one must examine not only this, but also the 3rd and 7th and 40th days from the moment of birth. Thus, in the present nativity, on the 40th day, the moon is found in Cancer." You see the positions on the 40th day in red on this slide. "On the 40th day, the moon is found in Cancer, Mars in Aries," down here, "the moon in Cancer, Mars in Aries, and Saturn in Capricorn. And it resulted that on that day, the two malefics saw the moon, Saturn from opposition and Mars from a square on the right." Antigonus means aspects by zodiacal signs, not by degrees. So for him, it is only important that the signs in which the planets are located are in aspect with each other, not the exact degree. And his text continues, quote, "This also then caused him," the emperor, "a miserable death. And besides, one must observe not only the moon on these days, but the other planets too, how they are situated, as in the case of a birth chart." Antigonus implicitly admits that he wants his pupil to examine 4 different horoscopes for one and the same individual, that of the moment of birth and those of the 3rd, 7th, and 40th days afterwards. Since the relationships between the moon and the other planets, as well as between the moon and the zodiac, will change step by step in the course of these 40 days, the astrologer obtains many more opportunities for explaining the biographical data. On Hadrian's birthday, the moon had no astrological aspect with either Mars or Saturn, because Saturn and Mars were in neighboring signs of the moon's sign. The moon was in Aquarius, and the two malefics were in neighboring signs without an astrological aspect. But On the 40th day, the moon will be located in Cancer and suffer two malefic aspects, opposition from Saturn in Capricorn and a square aspect from Mars in Aries. In Antigonus's view, this explains the discrepancy between the splendid political career of Hadrian and his miserable end. The 40th day of the moon, which symbolizes the end of the biological existence, was, in his view, exposed to particularly malefic stellar influences. Antigonus does not interpret the third and the seventh days of the moon in Hadrian's horoscope, but he speaks of the seventh day of Jupiter, symbol of kingship. Jupiter had been invisible under the rays of the sun at Hadrian's birth, but made its morning phase on the seventh day after birth. So Jupiter was invisible at the moment of birth, but it would be here, roughly, far enough removed from the sun to become visible on the seventh day. And this was, according to Antigonus, one among several astrological reasons why Hadrian became emperor in his 42nd year of life. In other words, in the middle period of his life between youth and old age. This middle period of life seems to be symbolized by the middle day of our doctrine, that is, by the seventh. Antigonus's final insistence on including the other planets shows that the doctrine of the third, seventh, and 40th days is a simple form of continuous horoscopy. This term denotes a technique of, so to speak, turning the clock of life ahead in order to find the details of an individual's fate in specific periods of his or her life. These periods are, in our case, youth, mature age, and death. The chronological interval that separates birth from death is, regardless of its extremely varied lengths in individual lives, speculatively reduced to a standardized number of days, namely 40 days. And the biographical significance is primarily attached to the moon, because this celestial body is, astronomically speaking, quick-moving, and astrologically speaking, the symbol of biological growth and development. Three specific days of the moon were chosen as significant, partly because there was already a special importance attached to them in the biological and medical contexts of conception, pregnancy, life, and death, as I have tried to show earlier. Since the number 40 had, in Greek culture, a long and strong tradition as a symbol of completion, of maximum extension, and of death, it was fitting to choose this day, the 40th, as the last to be examined. Another reason for the choice of the third, seventh, and 40th days is geometrical. Considering the standard figure of mean lunar motion used by ancient astrologers, namely 13 degrees per day, the moon will, on these days, be carried to the first, third, and fifth zodiacal sign from where it was located at birth. On each of these days, the moon's previous aspects to the sun and to the five planets will end, and new aspects will be established, an opportunity for new interpretations. It remains to investigate the overall astrological quality of these additional aspects and interpretations. Of particular interest will be the new relationships that the moon will entertain either physically or by aspect with the four zodiacal signs with whom it did not have aspects at the time of birth. That sounds very theoretical, but you see here what I mean. In any horoscope, this is just an example with the moon in Cancer, there are four zodiacal signs which have no aspect with the moon. And my question is now, what quality will the aspects of the moon have on the 3rd, 7th, and 40th days regarding these great zodiacal signs? And you see that green means a good aspect, red a bad aspect, namely square or opposition, and gray no aspect. So on the 3rd day, we have 2 good aspects and 1 malefic aspect. On the 7th day, only good aspects, and on the 40th day, again, 2 good ones and 1 bad aspect. So by far the majority is positive new aspects to be taken into consideration. We may wonder if this positive ratio is a chance product or intentional. A detailed analysis would show that there are 2 series of days when the moon's aspects with the formerly unconnected signs are equally good. The 3rd, 7th, and 12th day, which is the same as the 3rd, 7th, and 40th day of the moon, or the 17th, 21st, and 25th, and in my opinion, the reason why the first series was preferred over the second was that the symbolic significance of the numbers 3 and 7 already existed and was important, and that for the same symbolic reason, the number 12 was discarded in favor of the more important symbolic number 40, although the position of the moon will be the same on both days. I am close to finishing. Do I have a few more minutes? These considerations lead us to suspect another reason why the inventor of our doctrine did not choose the 14th day of the moon, which Neugebauer expected. This would not only eliminate the highly symbolic value of 40 as a terminal number, but it would make the total prediction based on all 4 days to be taken into consideration, the birthday, the 3rd, the 7th, and the last day, it would make this total prediction more negative and pessimistic. Because on 2 of the 3 days to be examined, the moon would occupy positions that are connected by negative aspects with its starting position. The square aspect on the 7th day and opposition, the strongest negative aspect, on the 14th day. Any support that the moon may have enjoyed on the day of birth by the slow-moving superior planets, especially by the benefic Jupiter, would be compromised on the 14th day by way of opposition. This would have serious repercussions on our example, the birth horoscope of Hadrian, where Jupiter was in conjunction with the moon, an important detail in Antigonus' explanation of the fact that Hadrian became emperor. But the 2 celestial bodies would be diametrically opposed on the 14th day, which does not happen on the 40th day. In sum, the doctrine of the 3rd, 7th, and 40th days allows the astrologer to differentiate his prediction in various ways, either with regard to abstract levels of quality. Remember Valens speaking of fortunate, unfortunate, or average nativities. Or the astrologer can also differentiate his prediction with regard to the main periods of youth, mature age, and death of an individual. The simplicity of our doctrine and the central importance of the moon in it indicate that it is old, from the Ptolemaic period. its close relationship with Greek number symbolism and Greek medical theories of critical days indicates that it was devised by Greeks or by Hellenized Egyptians. All this suits the information of our ancient sources that Antigonus of Nicaea, who employs this doctrine in each of his three extant horoscopes, followed the teaching of Necepsos and Petosiris, the two most revered authorities of Hellenistic astrology, whose manual is lost except for a number of fragments. If we consider that the doctrine of the 3rd, 7th, and 40th days was applied by Greek astrologers in no less than 9 extant horoscopic analyses written between the 2nd and the 5th centuries of the Christian era, and that all 9 are retrospective analyses, it seems legitimate to speak of a strategy to harmonize individual biographies which were characterized by significant changes of fortune with the general astrological claim of astral determinism. And to make one last addendum to my paper, what I would be very curious to learn from you, if there is any evidence of the kind that I'm interested in. I was struck at, when I realized this doctrine is based on the idea that conception, birth, and death are not momentary events that take maximum a day, basically only just a moment in time. No, they take 40 days, each one of them, to be completed entirely. Conception, based on blood and effluxes of the pregnant woman, in this view, takes 40 days. Birth is completed only 40 days after the visible moment of birth. And this has been revealed also by Indo-European studies in the past decades. Death was in a primitive period by various cultures considered to take more than just a moment or a day, but to be completed only after 40 days. And so apparently this 40-day extension of these three most important moments in a human being's existence gave rise to the idea we could speculatively reduce the entire life of a human being to 40 days of the moon and analyze the various periods of human life, youth, mature age, and death, by examining the moon's and the other planets' positions on these various days, which makes it possible then to explain how one and the same individual experiences, for instance, in the case of Hadrian, highest honors and success in one period of his life, but a very miserable death at the end of his life. Yes, well, so I would be very interested if in the various researches that you are doing, any such, any comparable views have shown up. But first of all, I'll be happy, of course, to answer your questions if you have